because you know why?
Why?
Because it feels right.
It feels right. Legendary.
I think you're hit the perfect spot. I think if we have stuff going on in the background, then it's kind of perfect because the people get to see, you know, kind of behind the scenes of Adam Stone's life.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Behind the hutch and find
behind China. Behind the hutch is that's exactly what's happening. And
if somebody told me to define the word hutch, I probably couldn't do it. But like when you said the hutch with the China, yeah, I got it. But I think a standalone, somebody using the word hutch, I would just be like, huh?
Yeah, I didn't even really know what a hutch was. She kind of described it to me. She's taught me a few different things. I didn't know that a key to your car is called a fob. I didn't know that was a fob until like 2 years ago, a year or two ago.
Like just the remote key?
The clicker. Yeah, the clicker or like to get into an apartment complex when they have that little thing. Yeah. I didn't know that that was a fob. So now I do. So
like the little key fob.
Yeah, prof is just, she's always teaching.
She's opening up your world.
That's right. That's correct. So are you still in Jacksonville, Florida, Robert?
Ish, I would say. Look at prof just peeking at it. That's fantastic.
Hey, prof, move those paper towels. They're in our shot, babe. Come on. Atta girl. Well done.
I'm in, Jacksonville area-ish, Ponte Vedra Beach. Actually, Adam, I don't know if you know this, but little known fact is that the ATP headquarters are in Ponte Vedra, as well as the PGA headquarters are also in Ponte Vedra.
Look at you.
Just a little fun fact for you today.
Yeah. So, well, since you're in that area, have you just been grinding practice with the people's champ, John Davison? I mean, he went three games with the John's eye. So, I mean, he's pro status.
Yeah. John Davison has not been in town. I think he's been spending time with his folks in Central Florida somewhere. And I think just based on his Instagram stories, he's been doing some car racing. Mm. You know, I still want to see video of him racing cars because it looks pretty dope. But I think he races a little Miata around a track and does pretty well from what I see. So
I don't know. You know, I never really got
he's into a dual sport racing. Athlete. Dual sport.
Yeah,
dual sport.
That's right. Yeah, he is. I mean, he's basically Dion. So
that's why that's why he's the people's champ.
Yeah, he's the people's champ. I saw that. I mean, we're just rambling at this point, but I saw a 5-7 second clip of University of Colorado, the first game of their football stadium last year. And then this year with Deion Sanders is pretty cool. So who is also the Deion Prime documentary is also going to be the same group that did the pickleball documentary for Amazon Prime. So just, you know, we're segueing. We're kind
full
of
circle.
Full circle. Full circle. Full circle.
Let's go. I used to love growing up a Falcons and Braves fan. I love Deion Sanders. Like he was so fun to watch.
Yeah. And he would he's taking red eyes from an NFL game to play the World Series and stuff. I mean, that's just good times, dude. He's prime time. That's what he is. He always will.
Prime time.
So
should we talk about a little pickle?
Yeah, let's talk a little pickle. Let's run through the U.S. Open quickly. It's very prestigious tournament, lots of history in our young pro sport, but definitely a lot of the player pool was on the other side of the country in California for the PPA shootout. So we will definitely touch on the U.S. Open briefly, but a two tournament weekend and most of the talent was certainly over in California. So let's start off with, okay. So I got some notes here. Men's doubles, Kyle Yates, Andre Dayescu, pretty smooth run, ended up beating the Johnsons in the finals. And I don't believe they went three games in any of their matches. So a nice smooth run. It's always nice when that happens, a solid bronze for Joey Farias and Andreas Silström.
Note on Andreas, shout out to him. He, I was talking to him briefly. He's been out like 5 weeks.
With the back, right?
With the back, but not, he said he had a herniated disc and he was for five of those weeks, he was in bed, like could not leave bed for two of those weeks. Ooh. And then, you know, for the past 3 weeks, been getting back into it a little bit, but dude, a guy of his stature, you know, on a pickleball court where the pickleball doesn't bounce very high if you're dinking and he's having to really use that lower back to get down, like, you know, It's just going to, especially his age, right? I think he's early 40s.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just going to, yeah, a little bit of a scary situation in terms of that. Hopefully he takes care of it and it doesn't come back, but it's scary for big guys like that at that age that, you know, have to bend over a lot.
Yeah. And just another reason to, whether it's regular life or pro sports, don't skip leg day. Cause when you don't use your legs as much as you need to and bend, especially from the knee, that puts a lot of stress on your lower back. And when you're 6'10", and the ball does not compress and come up to you, that's an issue. So, just another, you know, great advantages having that reach to reach into the kitchen, but it's never 100% all positive. There's always going to be some, you know, some negatives with the positives when you have that length, and you have that size. So, yeah, we'll see as some of the bigger athletes come over, if that continues to be an issue, because I mean, you can see a lot of players are very hunched over when they're at the kitchen line. Yeah. And, you know,
especially the taller players.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely. That's not an issue for me. You know, I'm just kind of there. I'm just kind of there with that low center of gravity, but yeah, you're absolutely right. And a quick little shout out to, Austin Gridley and Mario Barrientos. We hadn't seen them in a while. They had a couple of nice wins, beating CJ Klinger and Brendan Long, who's Long especially been pretty hot lately. So just wanted to give a shout out to them. Men's singles, man, Rob, you were there. It was pretty steamy, was it not, throughout the week?
Yeah, we're talking over 90% humidity and right at about 90 degrees, which, you know, you combine those two and it feels like you're in hell. So
yeah, it's a rough tournament.
And then that with a softer ball, right? It makes for kind of long and exciting points, but pretty brutal trying to put the ball away. It's tough conditions for sure, but especially singles.
Right. And you see that it was a nice solid run from William Sobeck. And when you see the children cramping, then you know the conditions are real, because I know he was struggling a little bit in the brief bit that I saw. So
big props to Sobeck, man. He's the past however many weeks, he's really kind of put some stuff together. I don't know if it's because he's, you know, coming into himself physically a little bit, get a little stronger. Had the issues cramping, but I think, you know, most people out there were struggling a little bit this week. So, but he's playing great in all events too, right? Not just kind of singles, which has been kind of his best event, over the last year, but doing much better in gender as well as mix. So looking to see how he continues to rise, but it's interesting because he's been playing for such a long time, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Where usually we see kind of the curve is just like, it usually goes here and then kind of levels off. Whereas then with some of these younger kids, we're seeing it kind of, you know, be a really slow build. And then, you know, they're really going up vertically towards, you know, now, which, you know, he's been playing for, call it 10 years already almost.
Yeah. Player growth is not linear, Rob.
Yeah.
It is jagged for some people. It's smooth for some people. It's very much not linear. And right when you kind of disregard someone and be like, I'm not sure he has that next gear, you never know when they might find it, man or woman. So very, very good point.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, he ended up cramping versus Yates Johnson in the semifinals. Yeah. The Johnsons play in the finals, Hunter winning that battle, and a nice solid bronze from Fad, Frank Anthony Davis, to sneak in there. So
nice. Yeah. I was going to say, Adam, just with, you know, talk a lot about what pro pickleball as a whole should look like. And I'm very much an advocate of going more of the team-based pro sports league with MLP versus kind of the traditional tennis style tournament format, you know, that we have 30 plus weeks of the year. But at the same time, the one, like you mentioned, in terms of, you never know, you know, a player's growth not linear. That's a little bit of the beautiful part of the sport, is that, you know, guys can have results kind of out of nowhere, and you don't really think about, like, oh, they haven't done anything the past six or seven tournaments. All it takes is one tournament for a player to really kind of turn the corner and get some results. And then, you know, it changes the trajectory of their career. So that is the one aspect that I do like of having a lot of tournaments, is that players have a lot of opportunities to improve. and to turn that corner. Whereas then maybe if we had a full-time team-based league, those opportunities wouldn't be as abundant.
There you go, Robert. That's playing a little devil's advocate to yourself.
Yeah.
I know you like that, but that definitely makes sense. And we see it all the time. So it's, yeah, we see it all the time. Nice runs, 2, 3, 4 tournament run, whatever the case may be, maybe just that one single tournament, and then a couple lesser results. But I think there's a place for both of them, and yeah. It's been a topic of conversation on here quite a bit. So I don't see, maybe we can put a little more team, a little less, whatever, but there's definitely a place for both of them. And I think they yeah. both have their advantages and disadvantages. So women's singles, Davidze going down to Castillo, who looked pretty good. I saw some glimpses of that singles. Very good mover. She was flying across the court. And I would say definitely Davidze more of a ball striker than a mover. So it was kind of nice to see that contrast. Also, Castillo playing Paris Todd in the finals. I believe it was 15-13 or something like that yeah. in the last game. So very nice run from her. And it was nice to see some very solid athleticism sneaking in on the women's side with some great movement and court coverage. Fudge sneaking yep. in with the bronze, and that's women's doubles. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, no, it's I would say with Davidze specifically that the slower conditions definitely was not to her advantage, right? Mm-hmm. Like we saw yeah. her at Red Rock and these other tournaments where the ball flies and she's able to really hit through the ball and hit through the court against her opponents. Whereas in, you know, here, a little bit grindier, you know, Salome's a little bit older in terms of women's pro pickleball. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the advantage in terms of movement's not there. And man, that the profile, the final with Paris and Judith was really epic. I was taking off on the plane and I was just, it was like 12-12 and I was just like, no way, I'm going to take off. I'm not going to be able to watch this. And I can't say the last time I've had that with women's pro singles, right? I enjoy watching it purely because, you know, it's entertaining, especially if Leia's playing Salome. But this is the first time where it's been like, man, like a really back and forth, who's going right. to win this and grindy. Like it was a very, very fun match to watch. And yeah, props to both of them. And also props to, I don't know if is her name pronounced Judith? Judith?
I know that there's not an H, right? It's J-U-D-I-T. Yeah. So yeah. I guess, sure. Let's go with that.
Man, we should find out we should definitely find out because she let me borrow. I've been going back and forth on the Selkirk Power Air between. So they have two different shapes. One's the Invicta, which is kind of the longer face and more narrow width. Okay. And the Epic, which is kind of the shorter, but a little bit wider paddle. And I wanted to switch over to the Epic, and Judith played with the Epic. So she, and I didn't have my paddles. I only had the long one. So she let me practice with that one before my other paddles got here. So
yes.
big shout out to Judith.
Yeah, that's a good reason for you to know how to pronounce her name. And considering I commentate pickleball, I should probably know as well, Robert.
Yeah.
But moving on. So last event here for the U.S. Open mixed doubles. You had a couple tight matches in there with Susanna Barr. We had old Jardine and Yates circa whatever the hell it was 3 years ago or something like that. Beating Fudge into Hart, and then you had Todd and Johnson beating yourself and Susanna Barr. Those were the two semifinals.
Yeah.
And then Todd and Johnson ended up taking it in that final match.
Yeah. So interesting day in pro mix, man. So as you know, mixed doubles. So for the pros, you only have one draw. You don't have both genders going. So it's a little easier in terms of scheduling for the mm-hmm. tournament director and for the people scheduling the matches. And I had a pretty long quarterfinal. I think it was against Andre and Millie. And yes. It was like 16-14 in the third. It was a battle. It was super fun. And match points on both sides. Couldn't close it. Pretty soft ball. It was a long match. It had to be an hour and a half. And so finished that. And then we're called at like noon saying we're going to be next up on championship court. And so I'm like, bummer, because it only came off like 20, 30 minutes ago, but great, let's go. Just unplugged my computer. But so get ready, go start heading to championship court. And then get like a little bit of a pump fake. They're like, wait, we're going to put wheelchair. We're going to put wheelchair, a wheelchair match out. And we're like, okay. So then go back to the little players area and just wait and kind of watch it on TV. And then that match is finishing up. So start heading out to get ready, warm up a little bit. Another pump fake saying, hey, we're going to put out Simone and Kyle to play. I don't remember who they were playing.
Robert, is that a double pump fake?
Double pump fake.
So okay, continue.
First text is at 12 to get ready. You're next up. 2 o'clock comes around because the wheelchair match, of course, went to 3 games. Mm-hmm. And got pump faked again. Simone and Kyle go out for their match. We're waiting. And then we get a message saying, hey, we're not going to put you on championship court. We're going to put you on court 37.
Yeah.
And so, you know, me, Susanna, Paris, Hunter, we all are like, it's the semifinals of the US Open Pro. Like, we don't want to play on court 37. We want to play on championship court. So we'll just wait. Go talk to Melissa McCurley and a few other people. And they're just like, we have a flag ceremony at 3:15. We've got, you know, the broadcast is going to be on CBS Sports. They need the court to set up. So, you know, you guys can all default if you want, or you can play this match on court 37. So of course we all, you know, we want to play pickleball. So we all played on court 37, but just a little bit of a bummer in terms of having a semifinal, you know, getting to the semis and not playing a match on center court. A little crazy, but
yeah, for the one pro draw that day.
One pro draw that correct. Day. That yeah. started at, that started at 8 a.m. by the way.
Yeah, I can see that as a little bit frustrating there, Robert. I did not know that information, but yeah, on the one draw, I get it. I know the flag ceremony is really important for the U.S. Open. They've done it every year, and sure, the wheelchair, all that. It's a good, well-rounded tournament in that regard, but one draw to not have the semifinals with four known players seems a little dicey in my opinion.
Not only that, but also like a interesting year for the U.S. Open, right? Where they don't have the PPA and the premier players that came to the tournament, right? So they, you know, seemingly they would want to do a really, really good job in terms of the pro experience and making sure pros are happy and wanting to come back to be a part of this event. Otherwise, right? Like just, you know, the moneymaker for them isn't the pros. It's the 2000 amateurs they have coming out to play and those registration fees. So I think the U.S. Open's at a weird spot where they need to figure out what they want to be and what they want moving forward in terms of an event. You know, if they're not going to get the PPA and premier players, just scrap the pro events and run a U.S. Open for amateurs and make it awesome and make that a feeder into some other pro stuff. I don't know, but they need to figure out what they want to be because you're right. Like the priorities are around, you know, showcasing the sport, which is a great thing. Don't get me wrong. Like showing wheelchair pickleball is awesome. It's so cool. The flag ceremony, very cool. But just decide, right? Decide, do you want to be a premier pro event or do you just want to be a great showcase for the sport, which I think they can do. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the US Open chooses to do moving forward.
Yes, no, I agree with you. And I think that they've so far to this point just kind of been one of the bigger tournaments. So they haven't necessarily catered or made it a top priority to, I don't know, fully embrace the pros in terms of whatever the case may be, you know, little pro perks or little things that would, you know, make the pros want to come to their event. And now that there's options, a lot of options. It is a little bit of a gray area for them. And I think that's a good point, Rob, as it's an important tournament. You know, it's got, if not number one, number two in terms of prestige in the early part of our sport. So I think it is important. And maybe instead of waffling, we kind of pick one direction. We're going to be full on board with all the top talent, or are we just going to be an awesome vibe, an awesome tournament that is going to be, you know, just focused on the amateur level. Either one, in my opinion, not terrible. So, you know, I guess it's a good situation to be in when both options are fine. So all good.
Another interesting aspect of and this has been talked about for the past few years, is, you know, kind of the interesting situations that arise around championship court and players and guests and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like I saw, you know, this was maybe 2 or 3 years ago. I saw Annalise, I believe it was grandma. Kind of get yelled at by a U.S. Open official to get out of the center court area.
Yeah.
And it was, and that's, this has always been kind of a thing at the U.S. Open. And this year, for example, like before I had a match on championship court, what I would have to do is I'd have to go to the player registration desk with my guest. I would have to get them a ticket. I would then walk myself on a championship court while my guest would get escorted by a U.S. Open employer official. Jeez. And they would get escorted to their little tiny sections, like little four rows of this tiny section in the very, very corner of the bleachers where you can't really mm-hmm. even see. Mm-hmm. And that's where all the kind of the player guests would have to sit. So opponents, guests would have to be sitting together, cheering against each other. Like it's just a little bit of an awkward thing. And so, and the escort stays the whole match with you, kind of like chaperoning you in your little section. And then my guest had to go to the bathroom. So she gets up and goes to the bathroom, and the escort, the chaperone, is like, I have to come with you. So
wow.
Walks her to the bathroom and waits outside, and then comes back and escorts her back. Just really pretty strong. Wild. It's pretty wild.
Strong.
Stuff. Yeah. Strong.
Seems very strong.
On a positive note though, I didn't go to the US Open last year. I was in Hawaii and health stuff, et cetera, et cetera. But pro parking was much better this year. So got a pro parking pass. And you know, we play on those kind of the back two banks of courts mostly. So the parking was right there, which was nice. Go drive all the way to the back. They had a little pro club area with AC, and you know, we know how hot it gets in Naples in April. Mm-hmm. And to have some AC you can go to was nice. But it wasn't for all pro players. It was for like a select, I don't know, top ranked, top seeded, whatever players this year. So it was, and it was by the championship court. So it was really far to go to between matches. But yes. You know, at least they tried, right? They did stuff. They made an effort, and props to them. But yeah, I think they got to figure out who they want to be.
Yeah, definitely. I don't miss taking that shuttle to the park. That's like, you know, a mile and a half away at whatever 7 p.m. or something like that. So it's good to see some adjustments. I know that they, you know, did some construction, had a couple extra buildings last year and this and that. And yeah, it is, I guess. I mean, what do you do exactly? Because those back corner courts are the best courts. And I do like it that the pros are back there. But when you do have a deep run and you're going back and forth between championship court or whatever, it's, you know, it sounds silly.
Dude, it's a long walk. It's not.
It matters. You need that time to stick with your routine in between matches. And like you said, Robert, if you don't sit down outside for an extended period of time or go inside, you're not even going to stop sweating in between matches. And that's, it's a big deal when it's 88 and humid. If you can just stop sweating and just have 10 or 15 minutes to just be regular, that matters going into a next match. We're talking about these kind of conditions. So, that's good. Good comments. Good chat about the U.S. Open. And what do you say we move over to that Newport Beach shootout?
West Coast, Best Coast. Let's go.
West Coast, Best Coast. And this, so the shootout, does that mean anything? Just that they don't have singles? Like what is technically a shootout?
Double shootout. Yeah, it's a good question. I thought maybe it would be like a rally scoring shootout, but no, just normal tournament.
Okay, gotcha. Oh, no, that's the wrong tournament. All right, gotcha here. Okay, so let's start off strong here with men's doubles. We had Colin and his brother losing early to Locklear and Newell. I do not actually know Locklear. I definitely know Ben Newell. And, you know, obviously surprising, but at the same time, not ridiculously surprising. We're veterans. We've been to these tournaments. We've seen some sleepwalking early matches from Colin and his brother. And, you know, it's got to bite you occasionally, especially with this kind of talent. And the fact that it hasn't more frequently, given some of the, you know, effort and sleepwalkingness in those early rounds. You know, it's just part of the deal with the talent coming in. And I, like I said, I don't know the Locklear guy, but Newell, he can play a bad match here and there, but he does some weird stuff, and he has some athleticism, and it's very hectic when you're playing
very,
in
very fast hands too.
Very fast hands and very hectic. You don't know what he's going to do. So I always talk about the John's eye and their structure. So creating chaos is always a good option to possibly break down that structure. And there you go. Nice early win from those two.
Perfect recipe actually to beat those guys is not trying to dink a lot and get into that rhythm and to create chaos. I mean, we've talked about it before. Like that's a little bit of the recipe is having one of my favorite things with Ben Newell. And it's like, I don't even think he knows he's doing it. But like when his partner's serving, Ben will just kind of like pace. Like he'll just kind of like slowly pace around. And, you know, I'll look up as the returner, like, why is Ben Newell standing in the midcourt when his partner's serving? But he just kind of like roams around and you're just like, does he know like how to like set up? Like, does he know where he's supposed to be standing? But he's just kind of like in a zone and just pacing around and like, oh, he's in the midcourt. Okay, I guess I'll try to return deep to him.
Yeah, well, hey, well, Cavs like that. I mean, you got that recovery speed. So you can be anywhere you want to, Robert.
I mean, those Cavs, best Cavs in the game.
I mean, it's next level. Yeah, I'd say senior pro, I'm going to give that to Steve Dawson. Regular pro, you got to go Ben Newell with the Cavs.
Best,
you know?
Best quads in the game. Who would you give it to? I know my answer.
I like Hercilio.
Yes, there's no question.
Pessa, good too.
Pessa too, yeah. But Hercilio, my God, the tree trunks on that man.
Tell you what, yeah, for sure. I agree completely.
But yes, so Philip Locklear, I played him in Minnesota with Julian. And yeah, not somebody that you would expect to go in and win a match like that, but at the same time, very talented and had a lot of nice shots and maybe a little bit inconsistency, but really good hands, good offense. Similar to like a Brendan Long who struggled with consistency for, you know, the past couple years, but has kind of put it together and has become more consistent. Always had the offense, always had the hands, always had kind of the ability to create, but lacked on the consistency side. And, you know, we kind of see like, as long as you have the offensive side, you know, and you can dial in the softer stuff and be more consistent, that's a recipe to be a very, very good player. So yeah, big win by those guys. And what I found interesting in that match is that it wasn't always just, you know, in terms of the chaos, Adam, it wasn't always Newell, you know, stacked on the right being a lefty. Like he would be on the left side some and Locklear would be on the right side. So just abnormal stuff, right? Creating chaos so, you know, the algorithm's off and they don't really know what's happening. Is kind of the recipe. So let's get weird, right? Get weird.
Yeah, I can just see like Colin, you know, like left-hander on the left side. He just starts twitching a little bit.
Yeah,
like
what's happening?
They start hitting up the line dinks and never cross court dinking. Colin's freaking out. what's going on? I don't know what to do.
This is not pickleball.
So good. So good. Okay, and of course, the big upset. They lose next round to Tardio and Whitehead. We had J-Dub and Dylan looking great out there, comfortable over Eric Lang and Jay DeVillier, which, you know, you would expect that. But Eric Lang, you know, men's definitely his best event. So two nice upsets for Staxrud and Taez. I can't believe just a mere 6 months ago I was calling them the singles guys. They have really stepped up their doubles game. Yeah. And to beat Tyson and James Ignatowicz, and then to beat, you know, just the definition of veterans and Callan Dawson and Tyler Leung, just two really solid wins for them. Yep. Very smooth from Newman and Wright up until the finals. And they end up losing in three games to the kids, Dylan and Dub, about as tight of a three games as you can have, but still three games. Did you get to watch or check out any of the men's doubles, Robert?
Yeah, watch most of that. And on the men's side for the final, you're right, super close. I thought my kind of thought was that Matt and Riley would drop the first one probably in a close one, and then they would come out and really be aggressive, and not aggressive in terms of their play. Yes, aggressive in terms of their play, but also aggressive in terms of kind of their attitude and aggressiveness and quote unquote bullying. Cause yes. that's how they kind of did it in the past. We watched that one in Austin, I believe it was. And, you know, they get down and then they just bring the fire and the heat and, you know, the stare downs and, you know, and J-Dub goes into his shell a little bit, but we didn't see that this time. So right. I don't know if that's, you know, J-Dub and Dylan just maturing and getting a little stronger mentally, knowing how to handle that moment. I mean, I think they're still have a pretty hefty losing record to Matt and Riley this year, mm-hmm. but at the same time, three, you know, taking the final in straight games and close ones at that, I think says a lot in terms of the mental toughness. So really good to see them kind of break through there and take that final. And I think, I think there's a little bit of an edge to J-Dub and Dylan in that matchup moving forward.
Oh, yes. And I think you said it. Just getting a couple wins versus Colin and his brother, a couple wins versus Matt and Riley, the top teams, that is a huge deal for these kids because they have been bullied before. I don't care what anyone says. There has been some form of mental on-court bullying, and I'm not 100% sure that they reacted great to that previously. So each time you get a win over a team that uses that as a tactic, that's big time stuff, especially when you're 20 years old. So it's going to be huge for them moving forward. And, let's be clear here, Riley still meddling uncontrollably. And I know he's missed out on the medals a couple times, but he's had a little bit of a partner carousel. He's switched paddles. And I think that, when 6 months ago, I think it was very even in mixed doubles and gender doubles with him and Colin's brother. And now it seems like these last few months he's had just a slight dip down and hasn't quite had some of those consistent results. Not sure if it's one of those excuses that I threw out there or it's just him being a little bit off, which very much can happen for a stretch of tournaments. So we'll just have to see if he switches up partnership. Maybe he gets that just little extra bit of cleanliness from that new paddle back, whatever the case may be.
Yeah. And, you know, of course that's, you know, we're nitpicking a little bit, right? Like sure. you said, yeah, been an absolute model of consistency and getting to Championship Sunday. And not seeing as many golds as maybe we thought we would be at this point, but just the fact that, you know, he's always right there in the mix is notable. So We'll see. We'll see how it progresses, but I think, you know, I think he's going to be right there, and it's hard to maintain what he's maintaining. So big sure. props to him.
Yeah. It could be so many, it could be any of those things I mentioned, or it could just be a couple points didn't go his yeah. way / he didn't feel the ball as well as he had previously. And this can happen for 5 minutes, or this can happen for five tournaments, Rob. It's very yeah. small little things and just feeling the ball. Sometimes you just feel like you can't miss. Sometimes everything feels awkward that day. This is pickleball. This yeah. is what happens at the 3-0 level and the 6-0 level. You just gotta roll with it and understand these ebbs and flows are going to happen naturally. So
margins are small in pro pickleball, and they're only getting smaller. So you're exactly sure. right. And I think little things like that will continue to be a big deal.
Totally. And men's doubles there, mixed doubles next. Tyson McGuffin just yep. finding a way to get where he needs to again. My goodness. Tyson and Lacey Schneeman, just a reasonable three match win streak in the heart of this mixed doubles tournament, defeating Jay and Jesse, defeating Anna and James, and then defeating Coop and Colin's brother. I mean, my goodness, is there, can you have a better three match win streak than that right there? And all of this after winning 12-10 in the third, in the first round against Pablo Tellez and Michelle Esquivel. So, I mean, this yep. is just wild stuff.
Small margins. Point, yeah, like small, case in point
crazy,
right there, right?
Crazy small margins. I mean, what, yep. that's literally one or two speed ups, one or two missed dinks in that first round to get them through. And then to have a three match run like that to make Championship Sunday is just, it shows everything we've been talking about right there on paper, Robert.
Especially with Tyson, just the mental toughness to get through that and then to keep it going. Like it, he's, yeah, I think, been extremely underrated in terms of his consistency and what he's been able to do. So,
yeah, totally true. We have the Johnsons, Georgia and JW, obviously with a nice run as well. They had a 3-game quarterfinal with Matt and Lucy. And other than that, very smooth from the Johnsons as they maneuvered their way through the draw. And they were able to take that title.
I mean, J-Dub and Georgia. J-Dub, double gold. Georgia's winning despite J-Dub. No matter what anybody says.
Yes. No matter what. And I think, I'm not 100% sure on this, but I think that J-Dub wasn't overly thrilled about playing with his sister around a year ago or so.
Yeah.
And things change real quick, don't they, Robert? As
J-Dub, you're lucky Georgia's playing with you.
That's
right.
Lucky. Georgia, the best Johnson. Said it once, I'll say it again. There you go.
Easily.
So, but either way, love it. Love Georgia's fearlessness. Really nice to have that big old older brother forehand in the middle to help her out. And they're just really firing on all cylinders. And I love it.
It's really interesting, too, because J-Dub and Mix doesn't take a lot of court. He kind of plays his own side, dude. Like he doesn't go big in the middle. He'll sneak over and use that kind of forehand reach, you know, out of the air to snag a couple. But he's not really dictating play with dinks, you know, moving in the middle, taking dinks, moving the ball around. He kind of stays on his side on the dinks. And, you know, if a ball floats in the middle, he'll go snag it. But for the most part, he doesn't take as much court as most top, you know, high level men and Mix. So the fact that Georgia's carrying so much court is really impressive. You know, it's
with a studly top 10 guy right in front of her also.
Yeah,
you know, it's not,
yeah.
I mean, so to do all that, I mean, I tell you what, I'm just waiting for the day when JW gets a middle dink that bounces in front of him. And instead of doing his little wrist manipulation scoop dink, he just fires one at the lady's Adam's apple. I mean, hey,
dude, I know
that's disrespectful, but we're playing pro mixed doubles here. These ladies' hands are incredible. I just want to see JW off the bounce, start the fire, and see what happens. It doesn't work. Go back to your whatever. It does work. Keep implementing that, J-Dub.
But that's the thing. The way J-Dub hits his dinks, he's not able to fire off a bounce.
It's too scoopy.
You know, there's no attack off that. So, you know, while he's very consistent with it, because the wrist is staying still, it's not dangerous. You know, if the ball bounces with J-Dub, he's not going to hurt you.
Right.
So, I mean, that's all people look to do, like make the ball bounce. He's not going to attack you. He's not going to hurt you. So that's, to me, and that's not a dig at J-Dub. To me, it's a testament of how good he is at everything else and how much, you know, room he still has to improve. Because once he's able to start looking at balls to attack off the bounce and start doing it, I mean, he's got some of the best hands in pickleball. To not have that at your disposal where you can speed up off the bounce and clean up on the next ball is pretty wild to me, that he's at where he's at without having that in his arsenal. So once he's able to add that, like we saw with Riley, right? Like Riley didn't speed up off the bounce for a very long time. And now he's got that little two-hand flick. Once J-Dub's able to implement that, it's going to be next level.
Yeah, I agree completely. I mean, I think his hands might be the best.
Yeah.
Just straight up hand speed, and that you're doing a couple replays, and this guy's hitting the ball harder than me with probably 5% as much of a backswing as I do. I literally swing almost as big as I can to create the power, and he's able to get that power with almost nothing, just a little this. So totally right. I agree with that. Once J-Dub manipulates that wrist on the middle ball, he can't do anything else. So let's see if he can make an adjustment or maybe just keep on keeping on like he does and getting on the medal stand. So either way, great job. Great job from the Johnsons, and a very, very rock solid double gold for JW.
Yeah. Great weekend. We'll see. We'll see if it continues. I think to really kind of cement his place, like you're gonna have to take out the, I mean, you can only beat who's in front of you, right? But I think seeing him take down the Johns, you know, kind of a little bit more regularly will go a long ways. But I don't, you know, we'll see when that happens.
Yeah, and yeah, it's I mean, these I mean, they're children, Rob. You know, having some confidence and getting a couple wins. They've had game three leads against Colin and his brother a couple times and squandered them. This is all stuff that builds into a total package. And I think that J-Dub and Dylan absolutely have those demeanors and mindsets when they run into some adversity, it's going to help them. I think,
yep.
You know, not everyone that's the case for, they run into some adversity, whatever. I think these kids are in a good place mentally and they're going to use these things to springboard them forward. And we've already seen it a little bit.
And I think there's no doubt about one thing. They're much hungrier. They want it way more, right?
Yes, like definitely. Definitely.
You know, they're kind of looking to come at that top spot. Whereas then, you know, I could see the Johns, you know, first sign of adversity where they start losing semi-regularly, kind of go throw in the towel a little bit. So we'll see.
Yeah, definitely. So good. Great stuff from them. I love those kids and I'm glad to see them having some nice results out there. So women's pro doubles, Robert, we have Coop and Bright and Kovalova and Smith. Pretty easy roads to the finals. With Kovalova Smith winning that finals matchup in four. Pretty solid match. I saw some bits and pieces of it. Nice bronze run for Gretchkina and Lauren Stratman, beating the two seed Leia Jansen and Elise Jones along the way. A little shout out. Oh, here we go. Little shout out to Stratman, new member of the Hard H, Robert. Let's go. Rolling nice. The dice.
Solid play.
Ended up trading Mary Brasha for Lauren Stratman, two pretty similarly leveled players, but Lauren Stratman with a little bit more experience and a little bit more offensive firepower. So hopefully she steps up for us. And we had some slight, maybe not slight, we'll just say we had some controversy in the women's doubles draw. Pretty chalky throughout in terms of results, but we had a disqualification, I believe, in the second round for Jill Braverman and Sarah Ansberry. Tell me a little bit about that, Robert.
Yeah, so let's see. Yeah, so from my understanding, I believe it was quarterfinal match, right? Where they won, advanced to the semis, and had to default that.
I'm not sure if it was quarters to semis or it was like second round, two quarters. Either way.
So paddles got tested pre-match from what I'm told. And I believe Sarah was told that your paddle is pretty close to deteriorating to where it's going to be, you know, past the legal limit of what it should be. So it'd be in your best interest to not play with that paddle. And from my understanding is that she chose to play with that paddle even after being told that. And then the paddle was challenged after the match by the opponents and the paddle indeed failed. And they had to forfeit that match and the other team advanced is my understanding of it. And have a little quote here from Carl Schmitz, who's USA Pickleball Managing Director of Pickleball Standards. And this is a quote that was released on the PPA Tour Instagram. It said, as is our protocol, Sarah was informed before the quarterfinal. So it was a quarterfinal.
Okay.
Before the quarterfinal that her paddle's core and surface bonding had deteriorated considerably over the course of the tournament. She received an official warning that with the current manufacturing standards, her paddle had a high likelihood of crossing the legal threshold during the next match and that it would be in her best interest to retire the paddle. We can only recommend best practices. However, the final decision is in the hands of the player. And that's Carl Schmitz saying that. So a couple things here, Adam. I think the fact that she was told that, look, your paddle has a high likelihood of being past the legal threshold before this match, why play with it? I don't understand that. Like, what, why risk it in a quarterfinal that you actually won? So that's kind of my first thought on it. My second thought is, how are these paddles being constructed? Like this, it was actually quite surprising to me that paddles are deteriorating at that speed, right? To where at the start of a tournament, a paddle can deteriorate significantly match by match to where it crosses the legal threshold of being of a valid legal paddle. Isn't that wild to you that paddles are deteriorating that fast? That's a
What's
problem.
That? What's that? Two, three matches?
Yeah.
Something?
That's,
yeah, something?
That's
yeah.
A problem.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And yeah, very, very interesting situation. I'm sure we're going to have, you know, a couple more of these as the testing gets a little bit better, and obviously going to be at all the tournaments. But here's a question, Rob. If we have, and we don't have a perfect system yet, but once we get more information, we have more on-site testing, it's more accurate, the thresholds are perfectly defined, is it considered really cheating if Sarah knows and just still goes for it? Once she gets that information, once the testing and everything is in place, I don't know, is she just taking a risk going for it? Is that considered, you know, getting an unfair edge? How would you say that actually stacks up once there actually is a full-fledged system for checking these paddles?
I wouldn't say it's cheating, right? I wouldn't say Sarah cheated. I would say, you know, prior to the match, the paddle was within the legal threshold, but she was told that there's a high likelihood that it will pass that legal threshold by the end of this match. So you're at a high risk if you play with this paddle. I think, you know, if it were me, I would not play with that paddle because I wouldn't want to risk the result of winning and having to forfeit that match. So yeah, I think not cheating, because the start of the match, it was a legal paddle. But at the same time, the fact that you were told that it has a high likelihood of passing that threshold, why risk it? Why? I don't understand it. It's like a head scratcher. It's like, why even go down that path?
And something else you said, Robert, what is going on with the paddle manufacturer that this can happen in two matches? I get it. It's pro level matches. They're hitting the ball harder than a 3-0, da, 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 whatever. But how can it go from easy pass to possibly failing and failing in a two match stretch? Like, is that standard manufacturing process? Is it maybe different than their regular paddle that they sell online that they give to their pro players? I have no idea. This is all just speculation, but how can that happen to such a level change in two matches?
No. And it seems, to me, it seems unsustainable in terms of paddle testing, right? Like, are we really going to have to test paddles before and after every single match and every single tournament that we play? It seems a little bit much in terms of, you know, paddles being manipulated to that extent between, you know, from match to match. It's like, do we come up with a better manufacturing standard? Mm-hmm. Do we change materials? Do we make standardized materials that you can only use, you know, that all paddle manufacturers have to make stuff within these specific limits, which I know there's already a pretty broad range of limits, but I mean basically to have more standardized paddles with, you know, specific nuances that, you know, longer handles, stuff like that. But the actual surface material and surface core are standard and similar. I don't know. But yeah, I do know that we're getting into some crazy territory here of just nonstop testing of paddles, where I don't know if that's a road we should go down, but it seems like that's the path we're taking. But, you know, props to the PPA for actually getting paddle testing going, because it's been obviously a hot topic. You know, it's been pushed by a lot of players that there's a lot of delaminated paddles. And I think without that push that, you know, these testing procedures wouldn't be in place. So while people can look at certain players as being whiny or problematic for voicing their opinions on delaminated paddles, at the same time, it's starting to create some change. So, you know, keep doing it.
And I only reason I'm using this example is because I just watched a documentary, but this is, let's be clear, this is a professional sport. There's money on the line. And when I saw this documentary, basically it's on WADA, World Anti-Doping Agency, and steroids. And it's a constant battle. They figure out a way to dope, then WADA figures that out, then they figure out another way. And it's just a constant battle back and forth constantly with finding a way to dope, to get past the regulations they have in place. And I just kind of see this as being the same situation with paddles. People are going to find a way. I don't know if it's switching paddle, finding a way, knowing the test that the PPA is using, finding a way to get past that specific test and still gaining an advantage, this is always going to be a thing because people will be people. And they are always going to look for those edges, legal and illegal. So I'm not saying anything about, you know, Ansberry. Nothing to do with her about cheating, anything like that.
Generally
speaking, people will always do something to gain an edge. And that does not have to stay in the legal scope. That can very much go into illegal. So
one note on this, Adam, that I found particularly interesting with the Newport Beach shootout in particular is that I believe all paddles got tested and some paddles failed the test straight up, but players got to continue playing with them. And only if an opponent challenged that paddle, would that paddle be taken out of play?
Oh, I see. Okay.
So to me, that seems wild. Like if you do a test and a paddle's deemed illegal or failed or passed a legal threshold, take that paddle out of play. Don't wait for your opponent to have to challenge that to be taken out of play.
No, that's a great point. I did not know that, Rob.
Yeah. So that seems like common sense is if we're going to spend the time testing these paddles for legality, let's, if a paddle fails, get that thing out of play because it's not a fair playing field. We shouldn't have to wait for your opponents to actually challenge that paddle.
Sure. No, I think that's absolutely true off the top of my head. I think that makes way more sense and, you know, had some great strides in this from the governing bodies and the tour so far. So, I expect probably more of the same. It's not completely figured out yet, obviously.
Question for you, Adam.
Yes.
If a player plays with a paddle that gets tested post-match, for example, mm-hmm. and that paddle comes back as failed or, you know, past the legal thresholds, and that player won matches and won the tournament, whatever, medals, doesn't matter what it is, earns prize money, what should be the repercussions around that?
No, that's a great question. And I believe it was the previous tournament at Red Rock. I believe PPA made a statement that said after Travis Rettenmeyer had issues with Tyson's paddle, they basically said, well, we're going to test this paddle. We're going to send it off. If it does come back, you know, illegal, Tyson will void his points and his prize money. And Rettenmeyer was like, well, what does that do for me? You know, like what does that do for me? I'm the guy who got screwed and I get nothing out of it. So maybe there can be some form of allocation of prize money or some form of something that player gets back for being cheated and not just a kind of a penalty for the player that did have that illegal paddle. So I think it probably needs to go both ways and there needs to be some form of compensation structure put in place for the player that did get, you know, cheated with the illegal paddle. So, and that's very tough and probably not a way to make that perfect, but I think something probably down the line needs to be put in place in that regard.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that against like the player who's at the mercy of the
illegal paddle. They just get to go to the back draw or be out of the tournament. That's the result of them, where all of the attention is put on the player with the illegal paddle and the, you know, the repercussions from him. So just a slightly different way to look at it, and it probably needs to go both ways: penalty for illegal paddle and some form of compensation for the player that got, you know, like I said, quote unquote, cheated.
Yeah. Adam, you mentioned the World Anti-Doping Agency. I read a pretty wild stat. I don't remember where I read it, but I'm sure I can find it somewhere. But it was talking about Adderall, players on Adderall in mm-hmm. Major League Baseball. Okay. And there was a specific year where it got banned. And then mm-hmm. it became very, very hard for players to get a therapeutic use exemption for it. But the stat that I remember, Adam, if this is accurate, and then so we can maybe double check this, but it was something absurd. Like the year before that it got banned, I think it was 85% of Major League Baseball players were on Adderall. 85%. Mm-hmm. 85%, Adam. Bonkers.
Yeah. No, it
bonkers.
Is. It is.
Like think about how big of a deal that is.
Think how hard it is to sit in left field and get two balls in 3 hours. Yeah. You think Adderall doesn't help you stay locked in when you're out there? And before Adderall, it was like, I love baseball. I always read these or watch these documentaries, and they had these things called greenies, basically amphetamines. And they would pop a couple greenies before they would play a game to stay locked in. And basically, if people on your team found out that you weren't into taking greenies, it was a big deal. They didn't like that. Like, they wanted you to be on, you know, basically it's Adderall, basically the same thing. Some form of upper that helps you lock in mentally. And so it's 85% wild though. And I totally believe it. And you get that peer pressure also from baseball players, but you know, we're getting a little down the rabbit hole here, but 85% is a wild number. And long deep rallies, hanging out in left field. It's all important to stay focused. And it's mental steroids are no different than physical steroids, in my opinion. And
I think mental steroids in pickleball, especially doubles, are more beneficial, right? And singles maybe not, but in doubles, man, being able to stay locked in and focused, like it's happened to all of us, right? Amateurs, pros alike. It's like you miss one shot, one return, you're like, damn, I just wasn't really locked in or focused on that return or paying attention, right?
Exactly. Like
your mind drifted for just a second. You miss that return. And then you walk up to the kitchen line. Your opponent hits your partner hits their return in. You get a drive coming right at you. You're still thinking about, man, why wasn't I focused on that return? And then you biff a fourth volley right into the net. And you're like, oh, there goes 2 points just because mind drifted for just a second.
Just a half a piece a second.
And there's two points right there.
Totally true. It could be, oh, when I get this next forehand dink, I'm definitely going to speed up the line. And you're thinking about that for half a second while they're serving to you.
Yeah.
And you know, it's important to think about that strategy. But you think about it, and then you focus exactly on the shot at hand, and that's what Adderall allows you to do. So, very, very important stuff. And you know, we'll continue to talk about this because it's going to continue to be an issue, no doubt about it.
Yeah, I would say a pretty decent percentage of pickleball players in the top, call it 30, are on Adderall.
Yeah. No. Yeah. That's,
I would say
Adderall's just a little hair after my time, but I know all the kids really enjoy doing it these days. So, just gotta figure it out. It's a process, and it's not an easy or short process, unfortunately, with the paddle and the PEDs. So we'll just have to see, Robert. Rob, here we go. This is my notepad. We've gotten through all of it. It's blank, baby. You got anything else for the listeners you want to chat about, or because my list is done?
Yeah, I would say just kind of one more little topic. So I was in Dallas. Sure. I was in Dallas last week shooting an episode of Destination Pickle. That's the new name for the video series I'm doing. It was Drive Deacon Dime, but apparently that's pretty similar to another show. For copyright issues, we probably shouldn't do that. So that's why we, you know, now it's Destination Pickle, which is still dope. But was in Dallas at Grand Prairie Chicken and Pickle shooting that. And while I was in town, there was an event that was a Champions Tour golf event, but also did like a pickleball exhibition. And Marty Fish was in town. Jack Sock was in town. So got to play some pickle with Jack Sock over at Dundon's house, and it was my first time. Well, I saw Jack play at the Bubbly in Vegas, but first time playing with him, and was very impressed. I think, dude, he's an athlete, man. Like, you don't really see it so much in tennis. Like, I never realized like how athletic he is, but I would say, you know, coming into the sport today, the pro sport, he would be the most athletic guy on tour. Like pretty by a fair amount too. Like, just the explosiveness around the kitchen line, like on poaches. Mm-hmm. He's sneaky long and sneaky explosive on that first step. A really explosive first step, which is very valuable in pickle. So he's playing the Charlotte PPA. Just saw he signed up for singles. He's playing mixed with Anna Lee, and he's playing men's dubs with Tyson. And you know, Tyson and men's dubs, like he's a rock, dude. So he's kind of going to make all his balls and let his partner do their thing. So I think interesting that he's coming into a first tournament with partners at that level, because one, it does set expectations a little higher than if he was just coming in,
sure,
you know, with a lower level pro. But it's going to be super fun to watch. And I think I would say, I'm curious on what your thoughts are, Adam. How do you think Jack and Anna Lee doing mixed?
Yeah, that's a great question, because that's a little trickier. He's going to be more comfortable in men's for a fact. Like we talked about it a lot. It's like, I remember even talking with Ryler DeHart and Travis Rettenmeier, you know, some of these tennis players coming over, and they just didn't really realize the mixed game and how different it is from men's doubles and how aggressive you need to be and whatever. And I actually saw like Corinne and DJ play Rettenmeier and somebody, one of his like first or second or third tournaments. And he didn't know what to do. And I've seen him play mixed since then, very different. So I would say, sure, it's a crazy amount of talent on there, on the court with Anna Lee and him, but we'll see exactly his court positioning and his shot selection and how that kind of matches up. I think the shot selection and the court positioning will be much easier for him in men's doubles than mixed doubles. So
do you think they get to the semis, top four finish, or do you think they're in the fifth place?
I do.
Get to the semis?
Okay, I think they get to the semis. Of course, the draw is going to be really important, but I am very impressed with Jack Sock from what I saw at Bubbly. You know, I have my little birdies out there, still in the pro ranks, you know, kind of telling me what they think. And the dude's a stud, and I don't think there's any way around it. And Robert, Jack Sock, he goes on the Tyson McGuffin podcast. They're partners coming up, and we might possibly have Jack Sock on the podcast next week. Maybe he matches up with Rob Nunnery for a tournament coming up here at the end of the year. We'll just have to see.
Yeah, it'd be fun. And one thing Jack did mention is, I don't know if he's actually shared this or not, but I'll share it anyways because he shared it with me, is that he's playing this one. But next year he's playing a pretty heavy slate of pickle. He's playing like a full slate of PPAs next year, which is really, really exciting and cool. And I talked to him about this, and dude, he genuinely, this isn't like a Sam Querrey type foray into pickleball, because like Jack genuinely loves the sport. He loves kind of the strategy and the thought process behind it. He likes practicing. He likes drilling. He's basically like a student of the game. And he told me, I haven't been excited to go practice anything since I was like a junior tennis player. And he's like, I genuinely get excited about going to drill pickleball. So really, really cool to hear that, right? Because it shows that, you know, he's really invested in the game and wants to get better and is going to actually put in the work to be a top player. And I'll give you a prediction right now, Adam. You want a prediction? I would
love to hear a prediction, Robert.
I think Jack Sock will be a number one, will be the number one player within the next 2 years.
If Robert, he plays a full slate, I think it will be less than 2 years. How about that? To double down on your hot take.
By the end of next year?
By the end of 2024. The end of 2024, he will be the number one doubles pickleball player if he goes full force into it. Not even full force. If he goes, you know, 75-80% into it. Because, I mean, we talked to Sam Querrey, and Sam's like, well, I'm going to try to squeeze a tournament in here. I have this other thing going on, and then I'm going to practice for a little bit here. If we get a full-on barrage of Jack Sock into the pickleball world, I have never said that about anyone else ever.
No, me either.
Remotely close to saying something like that, and I will step out and say that about Jack Sock.
Yeah, I love it. I think it's absolutely the case. And, you know, there's certain things, like first time I was hitting with the guy, you know, I'm doing my little forehand flick, and usually it goes at the person's right shoulder, right, if they're a righty. And so I hold it, flick it last second, goes to their right shoulder. Jack was sitting backhand, about to swing on the backhand, had time to come back around to the forehand and slap it at my feet. And I was like, silly hands, just silly hands.
That's some Mac Mitten shit right there.
Yeah. No, like, legit. You're sitting heavy backhand. Yeah. Yeah.
Completely beat. Your opponent's hitting an offensive shot and they just, we'll just switch over to the other side. No big deal.
And not just reset it, but counter it.
Counter it and reset it. Both.
Yeah.
That was the most impressive thing about Bubbly for me, was the ability to soft counter at the kitchen line when he was slightly fooled, and any form of not fooled, just power counter. So to have both of those already, pretty awesome stuff, and the tools are there, and it's going to be very exciting. Unfortunately, I have a damn pregnant wife really throwing off my rhythm. I was trying to drive down to Charlotte for a day and be a fan and just, you know, have a couple cocktails and watch some pickleball. But unfortunately, there's a baby coming, so I guess I got to stay here.
Well, it's interesting. Unlike most tennis guys that convert over, focus hasn't been on singles. He loves doubles, and mm-hmm. but the fact that he's playing singles and obviously has all the shots and super athletic and fast and explosive and can drive the hell out of the ball in the forehand. I'll be curious to see how he does in singles. I know as a focus for him. I know he hasn't practiced it a ton, but let's just see what raw athleticism and a top 10 tennis pedigree can do, right? Coming over. So dude, super excited. I wish I was going to Charlotte to actually be there.
Me too.
But it'll be fun to watch regardless. And do you have a prediction for Jack in singles and for Jack in men's with Tyson?
So I would say, it's really tough. I think even though his partner is obviously better in mixed, I would say that mixed and men's are probably going to be relatively even in terms of how I would guess that he would do. As I mentioned, with that comfort, being comfortable easier, quicker on the men's side than the mixed side. So I would definitely say singles would probably be the one I would think he would do the least well in. And that I would say both doubles are pretty much there. So a little bit more talent with Anna Lee and the firepower, obviously the number one girl in the world, but Tyson, when he has an athletic, explosive, powerful partner, he's one of the top couple options, in my opinion. Now, to be that offensive threat, he probably lacks some of the firepower to do that. But to pair with that player, I think Tyson's great, and I expect them to do well. And if they do something crazy like medal or make it to Championship Sunday, would not shock me. If they go 2-2. Also wouldn't really shock me, but I think that it's awesome. And I, just like you said, Rob, I really wish I was going to check it out. I certainly will be watching on the tube.
Yeah. Exciting stuff. Having top tier tennis talent come in. One last subject here, Adam, topic okay. before we sign off is the Pablito Téllez finger seen around the world, you know, against Ignatovic and McGuffin. Chippy match, came down to 11-9 in the third. Pablo and Federico pull it out. Tyson's homies, the Jackson crew, I think it's a jewelry company, the owner of that company was chirping at Pablo the whole match, it sounded like. And at the end of the match, Pablo kind of got, had enough of it, shot him the bird, said some choice words, said some yappy, yappy, yappies as he was going off the court, had to get kind of separated between him and the dude. Mm-hmm. And apparently PPA came out and fined Pablo, not Pablo's first, run in with officials, as he was the first one to get a card in MLP.
Well,
but just super interesting though, because he's such a mild mannered dude that like, it feels like people just like come at him and he retaliates and he's the one that gets in trouble here. And And at the PPA one, from what I understand, or from what some other pros told me, is that there were some racist remarks being said while Pablo was on court.
Oh, wow.
So in instances like that, like you have to protect your players, right? Like if there's racist remarks being made and it's verified by other people around you and that's in that area, one, that dude has to get kicked out of the tournament. You're gone. Like, and you have to protect your players. So if that were the case and Pablo was retaliating and reacting to something like that, totally understand it. You can say, you know, let cooler heads prevail and just ignore it. But dude, you're at your place of work. Heckling, great, whatever, right? Like cheering, booing, whatever. But once you start making racist comments and racist remarks, it's over the line and there's no place for it. And question is, we're gonna fine our players, but when are we gonna start finding the instigators and instead of the retaliators, right? I don't know.
Rob, that's really picked up in the last 6 months too.
Yeah.
Like you didn't have a lot of fan interactions or things of that nature, you know, a year plus ago, but it seems like it has kicked up a couple times, and that's a great point. I had no idea that there was a possible racial slur thrown in there, which is obviously too bad, but yeah, it's a point. I didn't really even think about that. If there is, there has to be a balance, and it's a tough one because there's the fine and the stoop to his level probably shouldn't do that. But
yeah,
if there is certain things being said, that kind of run along or are, those racist statements, that's a big deal and that's unacceptable. So you have to have your employees behaving properly, but you have to have a proper environment, for them to flourish and to not get themselves into those situations. So I think it is a fine line from PPA, and we'll just have to see exactly what happens as we continue with bigger crowds, and Vizzy hard seltzers and things of that nature at the venue, which all kind of come together to create these situations. And I just don't see how we're not going to have more of this type of stuff moving forward.
Yeah. I mean, I think the crowd interactions and the engagement's fantastic, just no place for the racial stuff.
Definitely. Yeah. That's too bad. And maybe
we'll do want to give a shout out to, hopefully get some more details on it.
Yes.
Do want to give a shout out to Selkirk. I saw they put a post out with like Pablo with like, you know, the chirping. So they kind of embraced it and backed their players. And Selkirk's always been great with, supporting their players and backing them. And just want to give a shout out to those guys. Saw the debut of their actual new shoe. I saw Dylan was wearing a new Selkirk shoe, which is pretty cool that they're foraying into footwear. So excited to try those myself. And just big shout out to Selkirk for, one, supporting Pablo, supporting the players, and supporting this podcast.
They're doing it. I mean, new paddles, keeping up with the technology as one of the original paddle companies, and now, you know, I guess they got the Ava Lee with the Brasha commercial and then the shoes. So really cool to see them going full force and kind of competing as an older school pickleball company competing with the big boys. That's really great. And I totally agree. And also wanted to mention one last thing, Rob, is that Pablo had no beef or no looks at his opponents when this has happened. This was all to the crowd. So I don't think this was even a small percentage of a James Tyson issue. This was a crowd issue. And I just wanted to kind of clear that up just in case. I don't think there was any beef between the players, all Pablo in the crowd. So either way.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, solid episode there, Robert. I enjoyed that one. And like I mentioned earlier, let's see if we can't get old spicy guest in there for next week. I know the people love me and you, Rob, but when you get a guest mixed in there, I think that's really what the people want. So
I want to get Jack on to hear his own predictions for Charlotte.
Ooh, yes, please do. Let's get that guy on. I'll have a nice little list of questions for him. And I'll make sure not to butter him up too much. We talked really nice about him. We got to, say some nice things, but let's bring him down a notch every now and then as well.
So I bet you have a nicer hutch than he has.
God, no doubt about it. No doubt about it, Robert.
All right. See you next week, buddy. Later.
Yep.
Because you know why?
Why?
Because it feels right.
Legendary.